Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Alan Chartok, and joining us now is New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. We're recording this interview Tuesday morning. Good morning, Governor.
You're Dr. Alan Chartok. Dr. Alan Chartok.
Yeah, well, yeah, and that's because, as you say, I'm an operator. So why is it so important that we keep this 2% tax cap? And why is it that the Assembly Democrats in particular don't like it? Is it that they're big spenders and they just can't wait to spend after the 2% disappears?
Yeah. The 2% property tax cap is, I believe, essential. Look, the big issue this year is the economy, and the economy is unstable. New York has taken an additional burden when the Tax Reform Act by President Trump removed the deductibility of state and local taxes, which means our taxes are going up because the federal government is going to now tax your property tax and tax your state income tax. And we can't have property taxes go up. We will see people leaving the state. I am convinced of it.
Well, we're already seeing it, right?
Right. We're already seeing it. We're already seeing our revenues drop $2.3 billion this year, $1.5 billion next year. So we need fiscal sanity. Fiscal sanity is making the 2% property tax cap permanent. We've had it for 6 years. It's been working. We've reduced people's property taxes. Why wouldn't the Assembly want to do it is a very good question, because the Assembly is primarily from New York City. And by the way, New York City doesn't have a property tax cap. So what is the motivation? My guess, if I had to guess, they are protecting or carrying the agenda for people who are against the tax cap. Who's against the tax cap? Primarily in New York City, the teachers union. And I say, look, if you want to do something about education cost, why don't you cap the superintendent's salaries? Why are we paying, doctor, $300,000 for a school superintendent?
That's a lot of money.
Why are we paying $250,000 retirement benefits for a school superintendent? And you want to ask the taxpayers of New York to pay for that? No way. No way. I am not doing the budget unless they agree to a permanent tax cap of 2%, which has been in existence, which all that does is keep people where they are. You know, right now, that's where we are. We have the 2% property tax cap.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about this. And we have a lot of things to cover, and we don't have that much time because I know you're getting on a plane. But let me talk to you about the pied-à-terre tax in New York. You think rich people who pay millions and millions of dollars for an apartment to crash in New York will not pay those millions anymore?
I think if they have money to buy a $5 million apartment, which is not their prime residence, and it's their little Manhattan getaway, they can afford the tax. We need to fund the MTA. MTA is the New York City Subway System, Long Island Railroad, Metro North. There are two options, basically, raise tolls or raise fares. I say raise tolls because those are on cars driving into Manhattan during peak hours. 25% of them are from out of state, and we don't need cars driving into Manhattan. We want people to take mass transit. So I say raise tolls. That's called congestion pricing. But that's not enough money. That only gets us about $15 billion in capital. We need about 40. So we also put the internet sales tax from New York City towards the MTA, and then we were going to put the marijuana funding. I don't believe they're going to have a legalized marijuana bill in two weeks.
What's their problem with that? I don't get it. There's a certain amount of, am I allowed to use this on the radio, bitching going on about you're taking away from the people who for previously selling the marijuana. You're taking that away illegally and giving it to legal people. I mean, what do you do? I mean, how do you get around that one?
Well, you have to do it right. And that means you have to write a program that does it. That's government. You know, the politics is easy. And that's the what you're seeing, especially with the Senate Democrats. You know, this is the first time in really 40 years that they have been in charge of government. And the politics is easy. I support legalizing marijuana. Yay! Okay, everybody claps. Now, how do you do it? Now you have to govern as opposed to just do a bumper sticker political slogan. And how you do marijuana is very important. You want to make sure that you don't sell to young people, that there is a legal market. And that's what they haven't worked through. I don't believe they get it done by the budget, which means we have a revenue shortfall, because my plan was to use the revenue from marijuana for part of the MTA funding. If that's not there, I said the pied-à-terre tax.
Well, we were able to get a good marijuana bill passed in my good state of Massachusetts. How come we can't do it in New York?
Well, first, you had, I believe you did it by referendum in Massachusetts.
Right.
Which brought public input where they discussed exactly how they would do it. They had to answer the questions to the public. We haven't done that in New York. All these guys have said is in a campaign, I support legalizing marijuana. Okay, and now I have some follow-up questions on the governmental side when you actually have to write a law. How much marijuana do you allow a person to have? How do you regulate the business? Who is going to be in the business? How many licenses? Are they close to schools? How do you empower communities that have been disenfranchised? What do you do with people who've been locked up on marijuana charges? And how do you now expunge those records? This is the devil's details in a governmental program, and they have not yet gotten past the slogan, because it is complicated.
Well, why don't you just tell them how to do it?
Because we have a democracy. That's what we do.
No, but that's what we call leadership, Governor.
I have a bill on how to do it, and I put that forth. They're working that through, which is fine. But it's not going to be done by the budget, which means we have a revenue shortfall, and I say use the pied-à-terre tax for that. I'll tell you what's really interesting. They were supposed to do, the governor does the budget, and the Senate does a budget, and the Assembly does the budget, and stakes out their position. The big question, I don't believe they're going to have a budget bill for marijuana. The big question is going to be the fiscal integrity of their budget proposals, because, again, it comes back to the economy and the fiscal intelligence of where we are. I get a call from a senator last night who says to me, we have no additional revenues in our one house bill than my budget, but we spend more. Can you explain to me how we do that?
And the senator said?
I said, there is no explanation. It's math. If you don't raise more revenue than my budget, you can't spend more than my budget.
Okay, so are we going to have a late budget? You've been very proud of the fact that we don't have late budgets anymore, that you've been able to. So now that the Democrats are in and are getting, in, I think I'm reading it correctly, greedy, will they hold out and will we be back to ground zero?
Well, it's not that they're greedy. They have not governed, especially on the Senate side, and they're political. And politically, you want to say yes to everyone. And there's one set of verbiage in a campaign, and then you wind up in government.
Yep.
So that's what we're working through. It's up to them. I will not do a budget that is not fiscally responsible.
Okay,
I'm not playing games with the numbers.
Now,
I'm not doing a budget without a property tax cap. I'm not doing a budget without criminal justice reform. I'm not doing a budget without ethics reform and campaign finance reform. So it can be done on time. It's up to them, but it has to be real and responsible.
Okay, campaign finance reform, Blair Horner, the Albany Times Union, and me. You know, I mean, there's a certain amount of hypocrisy here. And I predicted it would happen. The assembly was all for campaign finance and everything else, but now they're not doing it. Why is that? And I think there's some equal pressure in the Senate not to do it among the Democrats. Hey, they got there the same way the Republicans did. We could always blame the Republicans, right? We could always say, oh, the mean old Republicans don't want campaign finance reform. But now when we have a situation now where they have to produce and that there are going to be people running against them in campaigns and getting governmental money, you know, then all of a sudden they're not for it.
Yeah, that's right. This is deja vu, right? 2009. It's the difference between political rhetoric and governmental policy. We saw in 2009 the Senate Democrats took power. They promised this. They came into power. They did nothing. Why? Because the incentives changed. You know, I want to do public finance until I'm in power, and then I can raise all this money from all these special interests and put it in my Democratic Senate campaign account. So, yes, the incentives change. We have to do ethics and campaign finance reform and public finance, and it has to be in the budget. Now, is it complicated? Yes, it is. Everybody talks about the New York City system. There are also abuses in the New York City system. We just saw a public advocate's race where 987 people in New York City ran for public advocate because the public financing system basically pays you to run. So multiply that by 213 races statewide. It raises a lot of questions and costs. I don't know that we can get it all figured out by the budget, but we can pass it in a budget and then have a mechanism that works out the details. But it has to be, I believe, in the budget, even if you don't have every I dotted and T crossed. But that has to be in the budget. And I understand that now that they're in power, they would rather have the advantages of incumbency.
You bet. Yeah. Now, what about the pay raise? Is that going to be used to bring everybody into line?
The pay raise, the last person who wants to lose the pay raise is me, because I just hired commissioners based on the new salary. You know, you have a commissioner of health who, if he was in the private sector, he'd be making multiple millions of dollars,
sure.
Right? You go run one of these hospitals, they pay you $5 million.
Sure.
Here's the head of all the hospitals, and he gets paid like $100,000, $130,000. So the commissioners get a raise. I hired commissioners based on the raise. If we don't get the budget done on time, the legislators don't get their incremental pay, but the executive, the commissioners, don't get their pay.
Why don't you just bitching about the it's not gubernatorial to say that word, but about the whole idea of superintendents getting too much money?
Yes. Oh, look, I don't have a commissioner who gets paid near what the highest paid superintendents get paid. And it's just an abuse. Go explain to me or any New Yorker why we're paying a school superintendent for a local district $250,000, $275,000. And by the way, retirement costs at that level after they retire and get a pension. It's ludicrous. It is ludicrous. And then they want to talk about funding education and students. Well, then fund the students. Buy books. Don't give a school superintendent $300,000.
Let me talk to you about an utterance from the president of the United States who said that the Democrats hate Jews. Got a reaction to that one?
Well, that's an awful, untrue, false, disgusting statement. Just a really ugly, ugly statement, but it's not unexpected from this president. Here in New York especially, we have a beautiful relationship with the Jewish community. I have two brothers-in-law who are Jewish, as you know, and the Jewish community is a vital part of New York and the history of New York, and we're very proud of it. And that's why New York in so many ways is the juxtaposition to this president. He is about division. He is about anger and venting anger and hatred and turning one against the other. In New York, we're all about the opposite. We celebrate our diversity. We inhale our diversity. So nothing could be further from the truth.
I hear you want to change the fiscal year from, you know, April to June 30th. How does that help the state function better?
I'll tell you why. We're supposed to do a budget by April 1st. But the you really have more financial information April 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th, when the revenues start to come in, right? And people start to pay. Why are you doing the budget April 1? It's especially heightened now in this unstable economy where we're guessing at the revenues. We had all sorts of economic forecasters come in this year and say, be careful, be careful. The economy may be going into recession. We saw our revenues drop dramatically. You have a legislature that wants to spend. Even though they had all the economic forecasts, they came in and said almost $1 billion more in revenue. Why wouldn't you wait to do a fiscal year like most places do a fiscal year June 30th and just align the state fiscal year with the normal fiscal year of June 30th? It makes even more sense for the state because you'd get your revenue in April, and you'd have a smarter budget plan. There was a fellow named Mario Cuomo who used to talk to you about that, doctor.
I remember.
And there's no good reason not to do it. It's just a law change. The opposition was bureaucratic. That, oh, this is a pain in the neck. We'd have to change the way we do business.
And but our vacations. So we'd have to change our vacations.
We'd have to change them, most importantly.
And I've always thought that April 1st was because it was April Fool's Day, but maybe I don't know.
But think about it. Why are you doing it before you know exactly where you are financially? Sure. And that's my whole concern this year. Forget this. Micropolitics in the Capitol, which is all, you know, court politics. It's all internal, internecine stuff. The real problem is the economy and the instability of the economy and the drop we took in revenues, and we have a federal government that really hurt our economy with this SALT provision. My number one job this year is to repeal SALT. I'm going to be working with Speaker Pelosi, our congressional delegation, governors around the country to change that. If we don't repeal SALT, it will alter the economy of the state of New York for all time.
Well, you don't hold your breath on that. This president isn't going to change SALT, is he?
Well, we have a Democratic Congress now.
You got a Democrat, one House of Congress.
Yes. And they need to get things done. You still need the House and the Senate to vote. And I want to say to the House, you should not cooperate with the Senate unless they repeal SALT, which was unconstitutional and political retaliatory and damaged democratic states all across the nation. We have in this country, think about this, 10 states donate more to the federal government than they give back. 40 states take more than they give. Only 10 states are donor states. The number one donor state is the state of New York. We give more to the federal government than any other state. We get back less, and they want to take more from us.
So in the president's budget, we're running out of time here, but in the president's budget, what's the word for New York?
Oh, the word for New York is a very ugly, ugly word. He hurts us. He hurts us on health care. He hurts us on transportation. After all this, he doesn't mention the what's called the Gateway Project, the Cross-Hudson yeah. Tunnels, which are about to collapse, which would hurt the entire Northeast. It's the Amtrak route for the whole Northeast. I mean, this is pure politics by this president. He's playing to his base. He's playing to the states where his base lives. He's fomenting the anger, and he's punishing places that didn't support him. And New York didn't support him. So he's been punishing us from the day he's gotten into office, and we were right not to support him.
Okay, well, I'm sorry, Governor. I know that you have to get on a plane. You're going to, of all places, Buffalo. I want to thank you for being with us. We've been speaking with New York Governor Andrew Cuomo. Governor, thank you. Thank you for everything that you have done by letting people know where you are on these issues. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
I speak truth to power, Doctor, and you are the power.